There was a football player, played for the Chicago Bears for a few years, I think 7 or 8 years altogether. Unbelievable raw talent that anybody who saw him play could see. There's talent there. Skills that led people to believe that either he was going to be the MVP, a Hall of Fame player. When he was brought to the Bears, I remember everybody going crazy, everybody saying, this guy, it's going to lead the Bears to the promised land, that everybody's going to see how good it was. But sadly for the Bears, and obviously for the people of Chicago, it was never meant to be. The guy never lived up to the hype. He's always just a step behind or on the turf somewhere. In the end, Mr. Cutler, the quarterback for the Bears, just left Chicago ignominiously, I should say. Just another guy who stepped into the shoes and tried to do something and nothing happened. So what happens? When you have a guy with that skill set, with that amount of skills, that ability, who just doesn't live up to that raw talent that he has, how did that happen? How could it be that a person didn't do what he was supposed to do? How did that happen? And the answer is simple. He didn't want it. The greatest quarterbacks, the greatest players of all time are people that, it's not about their skills necessarily. Obviously, there's a skill set there that they have, and some of them have a skill set that's greater than anybody else, but it's that drive, that desire to be better, that something that pushes them to become greater, stronger, more than everybody else there. You could be a first-round draft pick or a 30th-round draft pick. But if your desire, your drive is to be the greatest player ever, and you have a skill set that helps you along the way, then all of a sudden your drive, your wanting to be that great was there. And this quarterback didn't have it. He never had it. People say all the time that he looked like, I haven't seen a full Bears game since, I don't remember, 97 or something like that. I don't know, really. It's been a long, long time. But they say that he just wasn't there. He was doing it either to get paid or so that, you know, he's just one of those guys who did what he had to do. And sort of the method was, if I'm great, then so be it. And if not, okay, that's where I am and that's where it is. I'm going to leave that up to the experts about whether, you know, whether he had or whether he didn't or whatever it was. But it's clear, at the end of the day, a person with that amount of skills, that amount of abilities, that great of a person not living up to the hype that they were supposed to live into is just a guy whose rut zone is completely lacking. So I'm going to point out something in this week's Parsha, and I think it's obvious. And I think anybody who looks at this Parsha is going to see it and say to themselves, you know, that's true. Why didn't I ever notice that? It's something that somebody pointed out to me, and I said, it's 100% true. How did I miss this? The story in the beginning of the Parsha, is obviously Hachnasas Zorachim. And you're dealing with guests going over to Avraham Avinu's house. According to Chazal, and I'm saying this because the Pasuk does not indicate this at all. If you look in the Pesukim, three men came to Avraham Avinu's house. Three men came to his house. He served them food, first milchiks and then a fleishik meal. And then afterward they got up to leave. Before they left, they gave a bracha to Avram and his wife that they should have children. So we're laughed at, and that's that. There's no indication at all from the Pesukim that these are malachim. No indication at all from there. If not for Rashi, if not for Chazal, you'd say it's just a regular case of doing Hachnasas Zorachim. But we know that these are malachim. And three very specific malachim, Raphael, Michal, and Gavriel. And then each one had a job, and each one was supposed to do what they had to do. Malachim don't eat. Malachim don't have the ability to eat. So what were they doing? So of course you could say that a malach in a human form has the ability to eat. You could say that. But I'll tell you something different. The malachim were not in human form per se. They might have looked like humans, but they didn't eat. So what did Avraham Avinu do? There was no Hachnasas Orchim. There's no Hachnasas Orchim there. He didn't do a single thing. He prepared food. He served food. But do you get the mitzvah if the guests get up and leave? Let's say I have a bunch of people coming to my house. People that wouldn't be able to eat elsewhere. So you get around the issue of they'll be able to eat some other place. They're all coming over to my house. And I serve them food. I go into the oven. I cook everything. I bring it all out, put it on the table. And they say, oh, we just forgot. We got to go. And they get up and they go. Did I accomplish the mitzvah of Hachnasas Orchim? I tried. I tried to do so. But no mitzvah occurred. They didn't eat my food. I didn't serve them.
So there's no mitzvah of achnas sorchem. The mitzvah of achnas sorchem didn't happen. It didn't happen. He wanted it to happen, but it didn't happen. It's one point, right? Go to the end of the parsha. At the very, very end of Parshas Vayera, we have the Akedah. Akedah Yitzchak. Akedah Yitzchak. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avraham Avinu, take your child, bring him up, serve him as a korban, bring him as a korban to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to me, right? Allow him to be sacrificed. Now, Avraham Avinu was very willing to do so. He put himself out there, brought his child, walked for 3 days straight all around, right? Could not find an area to be able to bring it. Sat there, waited until finally, and what happened? Did he do the Akedah? Was there an Akedah Yitzchak? So there wasn't. So he did nothing. The beginning of the Parsha starts off with something that he wanted to do but didn't do it. And the end of the Parsha ends off with he wanted to do something and he didn't do it. Isn't that interesting? He didn't do anything. He didn't do anything in the beginning, he didn't do anything in the end. Why is that in Parshas Vayera? Let's go further. Take the second story in Parshas Vayera. What would you say is the second story? After serving the Malachim, what would you say is the second story that's brought in Parshas Vayera? Avraham Avinu is told to daven for the city of Sodom. So he davens. What happens? Does the tefillah save Sodom? Is Amora now taken care of? No. What happens at the end of the tefillah? Kadosh Baruch Hu says no, and they go into Sodom and they destroy it. He tries to daven for them, but it doesn't work. Nothing works. Tell me, why did the Malachim go to Sodom? What was their purpose? To save Lot? Then why didn't they destroy the city immediately and just grab Lot and run out? What was the point of them going and eating and whatever and doing everything? It was so that the people of Sodom had a chance to do tshuva. Did they do tshuva? Did they do it? They didn't. So why did they go down there in the first place? It didn't work. It didn't work. Nothing worked. In fact, Lot lost his wife because of it. So why did they go down there in the first place? You go on with Avimelech and Sarah. That's a strange maisa altogether of what's happening over there. Baruch Hashem, Avimelech did not do what he wanted to do with Sarah. That didn't happen. But the end result is also strange. And then you go on with Yishmael and Hagar. And then Avimelech comes back again with a bris that he makes together with Avraham Avinu. The bris doesn't even last through Avraham Avinu's kids. The bris doesn't last. He breaks it by throwing dirt inside the wells of Yitzchak Avinu. So what was the point of all this? Why is the entire Parsha, a seemingly strange Parsha with unbelievable maisim that we all know, but none of them were accomplished in the right way? Everything seems so strange and convoluted in such a strange fashion. What's the Parsha teaching us? Especially with the beginning and the end, the greatest, the Hachnasas Orchem of Avraham Avinu, that counted as nothing, and the Akedas Yitzchak of Avraham Avinu, where nothing happened to Yitzchak Avinu. So we daven, but it's clear, we obviously don't put our hearts into everything we say. We could try, but we're not entirely putting everything in. This is really a pasuk. Yeshaya says, in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lama li rov zivcheichem yomar Hashem. Why do I need your korbanos? All of your korbanos, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You think I want to hear you get up and murmur? You think I want to hear you get up and go, You think I like that? HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't like this. Lama li rov zivcheichem yomar Hashem. What's the point of all this? I don't need the lip service. I don't need you just telling me things that I know I am in the first place. You're going to tell me, blessed are you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the God and the God of our fathers. Right? Why? You're the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. The God, the great one, the strong one, the awesome one. I need that? HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs such a thing? It's not that. What this whole parsha comes to tell us is that it's not about, I should say, not about just what we do. It's about the rutzen we put into things. Do we want to do it or do we not want to do it? If I really want to do something, and I'm an onus, I can't do it for whatever reason, I may not get the mitzvah itself. That might not count for me. But it means I'm doing my all. Everything goes in. Everything's there. It's as if there's something special here. If, I'm not saying that a person can do this, but I think this is where the Hasidim got their ideas from. If a person spends an hour preparing for his tefillah, preparing, getting himself ready, allowing himself to be there. He's putting himself in the position for his tefillah to be the greatest tefillah out there. He's stretching and saying, this is what I want to do. I'm really, really pushing myself. Then if at the end of the day, he can't daven, because let's say he has to go to the washroom, and he wasn't able to make daven, but he spent an hour preparing, I'm not saying he davened. He missed out on that mitzvah of davening. But that's something that means so much to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from you in this world. To just say those words is not it. It's for you to prepare to get there. To get to that point. To bring yourself to the point where you're trying so hard. No ma'isa mitzvah. You might not get the actual schar in Shamayim. But you get so much more. You did what Hashem wants you to do. You're not just doing what you're supposed to do. You do it more in that way. I'm not sure what would be in these cases. Because again, we're not dealing with schar. I don't know how to define that. But it's sort of like, I guess you could say, you give someone $100 and he loses it right afterward. The wind takes the $100 and tears it up into 1,000 pieces. Do you get schar for giving that guy $100? Schar for giving tzedakah, does it count as tzedakah? Possibly not. There's a Gemara at the end of the first parak of Bava Kama where Yirmiyah asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take away the schar of the people that are trying to give tzedakah. Let them give tzedakah to the wrong people. It sounds like if you give tzedakah to a guy who then wastes it or loses it or doesn't use it for the right reasons, it's as if you didn't give tzedakah. It's a possibility that's true. But that doesn't matter. Your rutzen is there. Something is going to lead. That's the mitzvah geraris mitzvah, where you'll get another opportunity to do a mitzvah. Since you did something great the first time, something great will happen a second time. You'll be able to grow yourself there, but there has to be a rutzen, there has to be a want, a desire for there to be something that goes forward. I think the Akedah stresses this idea more than anything else. Avraham Avinu trained his body, trained all 248 limbs to do exactly what Hashem wanted him to do. That means, and it's a crazy thought, before Avraham became Avraham, he was just Avram, at that point, 243 of his limbs did what he wanted them to do. If he wanted to touch something, he would touch something. If he wanted to move his leg, he would move his leg. Like Rav Elie Lopian, not looking down the street, the story goes that Rav Elie Lopian was standing by a bus stop, and he turned for a second to see if the bus was coming, and then he shook his head really quickly. So what was I doing? I was wasting my time looking to see if the bus is coming. It won't come any faster because I'm looking. Why am I wasting my time? The Rav Elie Lopian, the way that it seemed, I never saw the great Rav Lopian, but the way that they say it is that he didn't have one extraneous movement without thinking why he had to move his limb that way. He didn't go like this. He didn't move his body. Whatever he wanted to do, he did. He stood still. And he did exactly what he wanted to do. He controlled his body. Avraham Avinu was that to the extreme, to such an extreme, that when he became Avraham, with the extra hay, he was able to control his eyes, his ears, his mouth. He was able to see without seeing. If a person was dressed unsneezily in front of him, he wouldn't see it. Because he controlled his eyes to the point where that wasn't there in front of him. He could stop himself from hearing Lashon Hara. Because his ears, just simply put, wouldn't hear it. And he could control his mouth from saying, eat from anything, by being able to totally, totally control himself from everything. And I know that sounds impossible with the eyes and the ears. How can I stop myself from hearing Lashon Hara? How can I stop myself from seeing anything that's bad? How is that possible? Sure, I have eyelids and I have ears, but for sure I'm going to see something. Avin was able to control them. It's as if he had eyelids that covered himself up before something usher came. As if he had little flaps to put inside his ear that were stuck inside there before anybody spoke Lashon Hara. Avin was perfect in that way. And in that way, whenever there was a mitzvah available to do, his whole body rushed to do it. If there was a mitzvah there, he did it like there was nothing else to do in the world. There was nothing else there. His body wanted to do mitzvahs. He controlled himself. And the Akedah, he saw it was weird. Vayashkam Avraham Baboker, he got up early in the morning, go do the Akedah, and he felt like sluggish. He felt like he didn't want to get up. His body knew this wasn't the mitzvah. His body knew that the Akedah was not supposed to happen. This is the Yetzer Hara in the Medrash that says it tried to drown him in water. Avraham Avinu's whole body felt like it was in water. It felt like he couldn't get out. He was swimming, trying to get out of bed. He's never had that feeling before. In 137 years, I don't know if it was all 137 years, but for the years of Avraham's life, when he was there with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, perfected himself. Every morning he got up, he shot up like a lion to serve his Creator. He jumped up. And in this morning, he couldn't get out of bed. I'm going to call it a tummy ache. He had a head thing. And he couldn't really describe it. Do you have to go to a doctor? No. Like, he had something that was holding him down. He felt sick. And he pushed himself up. And he said, Vayashkem Avavokir, I'm getting up and I'm doing this. And when he went to do the Akedah, walking around for 3 days, he didn't feel well. He felt sluggish. He felt like he was walking in water. And for 3 days, he's walking around Har Moriah trying to wait for the time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will tell him where to go. And he's still happy. He gets a nevuah. And he gets up there. And he ties Yitzchak Avinu down. And as he gets up there, the pasuk says, Vayishlach es yado. He sent out his hand. What does that mean, he sent out his hand? To pick up the knife, to cut Yitzchak Avinu, to shech Yitzchak Avinu. He sent out his hand? We don't have that anywhere. There is no such wording in Tanakh that he sent out his hand in order to shech. We don't have that wording. Because Avraham Avinu's hand wouldn't go. It wouldn't go there. I said, my left hand, I'm puzzle coin. It would have a right hand. He wouldn't go. He wanted to shecht. And he's sitting there and he's like, make himself shecht. And his arm wouldn't go. He had to will his arm to take the knife and shecht Yitzchak because it wouldn't go. He controlled himself. And he's sitting there and he's like, what's going on? Because his body knew this wasn't a mitzvah and he still wanted to do it. That shows the rutzen of Avraham Avinu. He was so in control of himself, his body so understood what a mitzvah was and what it wasn't, he was able to consciously force himself to do something that he knew was not a mitzvah. And doing it anyway, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me to do it, or I feel that this is how HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me to do it, finding it harder and harder and harder. I honestly believe that this is what the Medrash means by him being stuck in water. And I know we say in Tfilas Geshem, that we just said, for those who are Ashkenazim, for Tfilas Geshem, that we say that he was saved mi esh umi mayim. We know what it means, he was saved by esh. That's the Kivshana esh. But saved from water, this is what it meant. That when it felt so easy to just turn around and turn over and just go back to sleep, when it was so easy for him to say, I can't do this anymore, I can't move, I can't walk, I can't do it. When he felt like he was sitting in water, he forced himself to do it. Even though at the end it was nothing. There was nothing there. There was no mitzvah. Nothing. But his ratzon was that much stronger. As if we needed to know that Avraham Avinu was great. As if this was the concept is, the chiddush is, that Parshas Vayera is a parsha that defines Avraham Avinu more than any other parsha in the world. More than anything else in the world. What defines Avraham Avinu? Wanting to do something even if there's no reward. Wanting to do something even if he knows this is not going to be a mitzvah. This goes against everything I stand for. This is going to cause me to be hated in the eyes of every nation in the world. Wanting to do it anyway. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Did he know there were malachim? If he knew there were malachim, why did he try hard? Why try? You know they're not going to eat the food. So why is he doing it? As if there are people there, it's hot. It's the third day from the Bris Milah. You're in pain, even if Rafal healed him. He's still in some sort of pain. It's boiling hot outside. The Chama is outside of its Nartika. And you're trying hard for what? For nothing. You know the food's going to be wasted. You know these malach aren't eating. And not only did he not serve them like a little bit of meat, he shechted 3 cows for them and gave them a tongue. From each one, the best part of the animal, whatever you want to call it, the filet mignon of the animal, he's serving it to these malachim, knowing very well they're malachim and they don't eat. Because that's the ratzon of Avraham Avinu. He doesn't care that it's not accomplishing anything. He doesn't care that there's no mitzvah that's happening and in Shemayim he doesn't get rewarded. He's doing it because he knows this is what Hashem wants me to do. Our davening, I know that when I start my Shemona Esrei, my mind is going to start rolling everywhere I don't want it to be. It's going to start thinking about all the issues, all the problems that I have, everything out there in Baruch Hashem, some of those I can daven for and include that in my davening. But I know my mind is going to go everywhere. So maybe I shouldn't daven. No, it's the opposite. Start before davening and say to yourself, I have a ratzon. I want so badly for this tefillah to be the tefillah. The tefillah. This is the tefillah, the one tefillah that I get that's going to be awesome. It's going to be better than everything else. And even if at the end of the day I can't daven that way, it doesn't end up being that way. But if I start with that 1 minute of hakdama, of 1 minute of hakana, of preparation, saying to myself, this is what I need to do, maybe that'll change my davening. Even if it's not even a minute, just a second. This is my tefillah. I'm doing this. This is going to happen right now. Even if it doesn't happen, the ratzon is so important. It changes everything. Everything. It doesn't matter. I don't want to say it doesn't matter. The ma'isa mitzvah still might be lacking. But it doesn't matter in God's eyes if we're dealing with ratzon. Your ratzon is there. That's the result. That's the idea of what this parsha is trying to say. Can you imagine this in the outside world? You go to your boss tells you, did you finish the report I gave you last week to do? I wanted to do it. I so badly wanted it, but I didn't finish it. But I really wanted to. Of course that doesn't work. Of course, the ma'isa mitzvah isn't there. You're not going to get paid. You won't get your paycheck because you didn't do what you were supposed to do. But the boss won't fire you because the boss says, I see he wants it. I really see that he wants it. On the other hand, if you go to the boss and you're just like, it was too hard for me, I couldn't do it. You kidding me? It's too hard for you? It's too hard for you? You're fired. At least now, at least we're not fired. We still have a job. We're just not doing it the best way possible. So we're doing something. It's like almost like, seriously, this whole thing is like a scientific experiment without a conclusion. So I have an experiment, I decide what I want to do, I have my hypothesis, and I'm going to go through the entire process, and in the end, I don't know, I quit. I'm just not going to do it at the end. So again, that's a horrible scientist. But the concept is, at least you have something there to go with. Someone else might be able to finish up your work. Look, we know, and I know, learning and asiyas and mitzvos are unbelievably chashuv to us. They're so different from everything else in the Welt. Everything else in the world works in different ways. Learning and asiyas and mitzvos to us seems like the end game. And in very many ways, in many, many ways, it is the end game. It's the only thing there. But our ratzon, our willpower, what we want to do, and showing HaKadosh Baruch Hu what we want to do, has so much more significance. So much more significance. We don't even realize it, how much more significance it has. Let's look at ourselves and say to ourselves, what do we want to do? How can we make ourselves different? How do I push myself to be better when it comes to this? And maybe, just maybe, again, no promises when it comes to this. Maybe it will change our davening. Maybe our davening is going to be a little bit different. Maybe our learning is going to be a little bit different. Maybe our lives are going to be a little bit different when we start giving up something a little bit more and saying, it's not about doing the mitzvah, it's about what Hashem wants me to do and what I want to do for Hashem. Maybe that will change our ma'aseh mitzvah. It's not a promise. But the concept of where ratzon brings you, it's just a different world. It's a completely different world. Have a good week, everyone.